This is Nana Visitor, and this is Screen Geeks Radio.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, our post-Starfest edition. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And we're going to keep the Starfest stuff to a minimum, I promise. But I had to play Nana Visitor since we kind of got a few hits this week due to that interview.
Thank you, Nana. Clearly, we owe you a big old Screen Geeks hug over here for helping us out like you did. Thank you so
much. Absolutely. And the gentleman over at Cool Merrick posted the article that I sent him, and thank you much for doing that as well, sir. If you're listening, yes. I'm sure you're not, but hey, why not at Jack?
All the same, props.
Yes. So, do we want to mention Starfest really quick? Because I'm posting the interviews. We've still got a few more. Got some Horrorfest stuff still to go, and Nichelle Nichols and Anne Lockhart, and yeah, holy crap.
We should. We've got a multitude of things still to unleash upon the internet world, and it was such a wonderful experience. It's I got to say, I'm still kind of going through rehab. You know, just that it's not here anymore, and.
Yeah, some quick shout-outs to Jeff and Christine, I do believe this is from iSciFi.tv, and John and Chris from Jonja.net, as well as the entire Jonja.net crew who flew out for this thing. We got some crazy stuff lined up for next year. Going to have a lot more video, we'll have some better video interviews and all kinds of stuff going. So it was a good time. Next year is going to be even better, I think.
Every year just gets better and better. But yeah, this year was fantastic, and we managed to get some fantastic footage, some great pictures, amazing interviews. The lineup was really good this year. It was just a really just full-on solid Starfest this year.
We had a really good time. It was a lot of fun. We've learned a lot, so this is our first year like doing serious coverage of it, and so we've got some things lined up to help things go a little bit better even for next year. So yes. With all that said and done, let's go ahead and talk about what hit theaters this past weekend.
Well, it's this is an infamous weekend as being like the dumping ground before the big summer movie season starts. At least that's the way Hollywood is viewed, the April 25th dumping ground weekend. Currently, the number one movie in America, kind of a sad situation, Tina Fey's Baby Mama. Now, I like Tina Fey, but remember, folks, she did not write this movie. So you've been warned. Deception, formerly The List, formerly The Tourist, formerly the Hugh Jackman pervy project. This is like that terrible movie with Hugh Jackman and Ewan McGregor that was supposed to be like this big erotic thriller, but it's actually become this real big embarrassment.
Okay, you may want to clarify that, because all I heard was Hugh Jackman and Ewan McGregor in an erotic thriller, which kind of says...
Sorry, yeah, it's...
I'm just figuring we should probably...
Absolutely. Jackman is like, he's like the leader of this sexual underworld, and he kind of lures like Ewan McGregor into this world. But yeah, there's no Wolverine and Obi-Wan love scenes. Let's just put it that way. Yeah, okay. Nothing like that. Okay. No.
It's pretty much you get that cleared up.
And then finally, the one shining bright spot on the list this weekend, if you can call it that, is Harold and Kumar, Escape from Guantanamo Bay.
Which it didn't even take the weekend. I'm so surprised.
It didn't. Yeah. I can't believe Baby Mama beat Harold and Kumar.
NPH. The power of NPH could not bring this to the number one. I don't understand it. What kind of world do we live in?
I know. It's him on a unicorn, for Pete's sake, and still...
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and hit what DVDs are hitting on Tuesday. And there's a lot. This is like a good couple of weeks, actually.
Yes. We got Katherine Heigl. And, you know, it wasn't bad. 27 Dresses along with James Marsden.
As in, you don't want to like pour battery acid in your eyes afterwards, or it's just...
I got to say, it'll go at the end of the year, it'll go on my list for movies that were better than I thought they would be, better than expected. It really wasn't that bad. It was much better than I thought. It was actually pretty funny. Yeah, it wasn't Runaway Bride, let's put it that way.
Okay.
As far as movies that are truly terrible, The Golden Compass, now available in the 1 and 2 disc special edition. Our advice, don't get either, just read the book. The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, supposed to be an excellent film. I've yet to see it, shame on me. The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones, Volume 3. I Spy. Seasons 1, 2, and 3 available.
This show is awesome.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. I'm like, season one, season two, all three seasons? And it's like $15 a season. I'm like, I'm so absolutely
there. It's fantastic.
There.
And I love Cosby in I Spy. Love it. Just his draw, deadpan sense of humor is fantastic.
The pre-Cosby show stuff, pretty much.
Yes. Three Caballeros, the first Disney movie to ever affect. It's one of the very first combinations of live action and animation. Very good. That's going to be unavailable.
The only question is if it's actually edited or not, which I'm not sure at this point. I'll do a little more digging, but we'll see.
And that would stink. And then The Red Balloon, one of the finest movies ever made. A movie that doesn't, it has dialogue, excuse me, no dialogue, I'm sorry, no dialogue, but it has music. But it's a film that's been shown all around the world because there's no particular language it's set in. It is a gorgeous work of art, a beautiful film, only about 50 minutes long, but truly, truly, see The Red Balloon.
And it's a Criterion.
Yes.
Which means it's good.
Oh, yeah, without saying.
Now going back a week in DVD releases, went ahead and watched Cloverfield again.
How was Cloverfield the second time?
It was tougher to get through, I'll be really honest. About 10 minutes into the thing, I'm like, would you all please start dying already? Because I'm seriously, WB pretty people pretending they're troubled, and it's like a soap opera. I was sitting at the game store I work at part-time watching it, and I'm just like, would you all die already? And then about 10 minutes later, things start happening.
Are you going to go along with Jeff's theory that there are at least three or four different monsters in Cloverfield?
I would have to say, as far as the big monsters, it seems that there are two. Yes, the official production is, you know, there's only one monster, but the figure that they've put out has none of the, like, the orange, like, sacks that, you know, expand right as he's breathing and stuff. There's none of that on that figure. So I'm like, that means that there has to be two, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure.
Honestly, the second time through, I couldn't have cared less anymore. The highlight was when the girl's head blew up.
So it really was like Blair Witch, because a lot of people, they saw Blair Witch the second time, they're like, what's the big deal? So it was like that for you?
You know, I'd say Blair Witch was better the second time around.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, because this just didn't do it. I'd watch The Last Broadcast again.
Man.
Before watching Cloverfield anymore.
Wow. And you know, this is one of the reasons that movie just didn't play after its opening weekend when it was so huge. And then following weekends, people were like, okay, we saw it and time to move on.
Don't get me wrong. I like the concept and all. It's just I couldn't have cared less about the characters.
Yeah, and I felt that way the first time I saw it.
And the second time I saw it, HUD, I'm like, they're totally trying to do Ryan Reynolds. Because if you listen to his delivery and everything, it totally sounds like him. Except a lot more annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Because, yeah, Ryan Reynolds is funny. HUD, not so much. Yeah. Okay, shall we move on to some news?
Absolutely.
I'll let you start it off.
All right. Well, the Cannes Film Festival lineup for 2008 has been announced. I'm not going to go through every single one of them, but here are some of the highlights. Movies that are competing for the Palme d'Or, the Best Picture Award. The Changeling, the Clint Eastwood kidnapping thriller starring Angelina Jolie. That actually looks like a really good movie. Synecdoche, New York, the Charlie Kaufman comedy with Philip Seymour Hoffman. Shay, the four-hour depiction of Che Guevara, directed by Steven Soderbergh. The Palermo Shooting, the Wim Wenders thriller with Dennis Hopper and Mila Jovovich. Out of Competition, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Wouldn't it be cool if a movie like that actually won the Best Picture at the Cannes Film Festival? never happened, but all the same. Kung Fu Panda, the new Woody Allen thriller, which is getting a lot of buzz. Vicky Cristina Barcelona with Scarlett Johansson, Javier Bardem, and Penelope Cruz. Surveillance, the new thriller by Jennifer Lynch. If you haven't seen this trailer online, it is creepy, creepy, creepy looking. Documentary on Roman Polanski. And also, the jurors for this year include Sean Penn, Natalie Portman, and Children of Men director Alfonso Cuarón.
Interesting. You know, we didn't have this listed on here, but since we're talking about Cannes movies, Kill Bill. Did you read the thing from, I believe it was Uma Thurman? She's saying that Tarantino's working on doing some animated stuff that's hopefully going to be coming out with the whole bloody affair, Kill Bill.
Cool.
Which is, I've been waiting for it to come out for about 2 years now. They had box art last year at Comic-Con, so everyone's like, it's going to be November. That was the date. Amazon had the date. It got pushed back to January. Now it's completely off their sites and everything. And I'm wondering if this is going to be like Inglorious Bastards. It's something you keep hearing about, but it's never actually going to happen.
Kill Bill and the Grindhouse Experience is like they keep pushing it back. And like, where are these movies? There's such a huge demand for them.
Well, and they've released Grindhouse, at least in Japan. Granted, you have to pay $100 essentially to get it, but...
Well, I'm sure the Japanese are very, very happy with it, but over here...
Well, it's a six-disc set. Both Grindhouse, both Death Proof and Planet Terror are both in DTS, and... It's a cool set, but I'm not paying $100.
Why can't we get that? Ugh, that is so frustrating.
You'd think it'd play better here. I don't know. I mean, even if Exploited Cinema put it out or something. Actually, I think they may have it. But it's the, again, Japanese edition. So essentially, theoretically, it's coming out at some point.
Okay.
I guess I'll do the next one, too. This isn't strictly movie-related, but the Iron Man demo for Xbox 360 came out over the weekend. I played it. If you have Live, if you have a 360, download it. It is so much freaking fun. I don't know if it's $60 worth of fun, but it is a blast. Robert Downey Jr. does do the voice of Tony Stark, and it's just fun, just like running up to tanks and tearing the tops off, or using, you know, the mechanized rocket launchers and be able to launch rockets at other people. And
sweet.
I actually had a helicopter shoot a missile at me. I caught it in midair and then threw it back at the helicopter. And
very Hulk. How cool.
Very cool. Yeah. Well worth checking out. So yeah, at least do the demo.
Excellent. Well, speaking of the Iron Man, the first review for Iron Man came in from Variety Magazine, and it is a rave. I'm not going to even hint at
what a shock.
Well, the thing, they honestly did not like the climax of the movie, and I'm not going to describe it, not going to talk about it, but they said that the climax was the one down, kind of a disappointment as far as the whole movie, but they said not only was the movie totally classy, but Robert Downey Jr.'s performance, I think, is one of the best of its type, meaning one of the best you'll ever see in a comic book movie. He apparently just completely energizes and just propels this movie the same way Johnny Depp has for Pirates. So apparently it's Downey Jr.'s show, and apparently he does a fantastic job. So hopefully the movie lives up to the review.
Very cool. Right on. Let's see. All the rest of the news I have is all crap. So I'll just start off with it. Did you see the new You Don't Mess With the Zohan trailer?
I did, unfortunately, yes.
I laughed. I laughed once, and that was when I thought about what's going to happen to the idiot who actually greenlit this thing. The thing was painful. Either that or I'm just old and I'm not part of the target audience.
No, I'll tell you what, Dave. I mean, the part with the kicking the guy in the face with the foot, that's the only thing that ever made me laugh in this trailer the first time. And that's what made me laugh in the trailer the second time. But again, it's just a longer trailer. It doesn't look like it's funny. It looks like the movie is very exploitative and offensive, to tell you the truth. And it's going to really make a lot of people uncomfortable making a joke about an Israeli terrorist. So, yeah, I can't say this is going to be...
No, he's an Israeli government operative.
Right. Well, yeah, okay, there you go. Much better.
And apparently somewhere Judd Apatow's name is in the writing credits. And
yeah.
This could hurt.
I don't trust that anymore. It's like Seth Rogen apparently helped co-write Drobit Taylor, and I've heard Drobit Taylor is terrible.
Yeah.
So the Apatow crew, as much as I love those guys, they clearly are not above making a mistake.
Yeah.
Like Zohan.
And this sure looks like it.
It looks terrible. It looks like it's going to be another Chuck and Larry.
Yeah. If we're lucky. Have you got any other news, sir?
I do. Dolan's Cadillac is back. This is one of Stephen King's best short stories. It's a really interesting and very clever story about a mobster, Dolan, who kills a man's wife, and the widow basically gets his revenge. And I won't say how, because it's really, really clever, really cool, great short story. Years ago, Dolan was going to be played by Sylvester Stallone, and the man seeking revenge was going to be Kevin Bacon. That project fell apart, unfortunately. Would have been interesting. Well, it's back. Now, Christian Slater is playing Dolan, and Wes Bentley is playing the man out for revenge. Dolan's Cadillac is back.
Is that good?
I don't know, because Slater's played a mobster before in a movie of the same name, Mobsters. And Bentley, you know, he hasn't had a good movie since, American Beauty.
Yeah, it's kind of so, what I was thinking.
I don't know. It's a great story, and if they do it right, I think it'd be really, really terrific. But yeah, again, you know, the casting really is everything for this thing. But yeah, we'll just have to see how those two play together. It's just it is a weird team up. But hey, if this is the movie that ends up being Christian Slater's big comeback, so be it. I'd love that.
Absolutely. I'm going to take a jaunt into TV land, because we don't do TV news too often.
Yeah.
But apparently, according to Slash Film, I do love me some Slash Film. There's another Slash Film thing I totally forgot to write on here, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
But apparently Jimmy Fallon will be taking over for Conan O'Brien when he takes over for Jay Leno. And is he going to laugh at his own jokes for the entire show? It's my only question.
That show will truly... truly be for me to poop on. That is just terrible, terrible, terrible. Jimmy Fallon, has he
wouldn't
ever,
Carson Daly do better? I'm just going to throw that out
me
there.
Laugh. The best thing he ever did as an actor, I'd say, was Fever Pitch, but you know, he's just so underwhelming.
I'd almost rather him than just go get Carson Daly, and that's really pushing it.
I would rather Chevy Chase come back and do it. I would rather Pat Sajak come back and do it.
Pat Sajak.
It's seriously. Jimmy Fallon, he's just so underwhelming. He's so smarmy and like, he thinks he's hilarious. He always cracked up during his own Saturday Night Live skits. I've never liked him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's another one of those Chris Kattan guys. Like, I just wish he would just kind of just vanish into SNL obscurity.
There you go. All right, then.
But obviously, I have no powerful, passionate feelings about that at all.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Remake alert. The new remake of the week. The Fury. Apparently, someone's greenlit Brian De Palma's The Fury for a remake. This was De Palma's follow-up to Carrie, although, unlike Carrie, it was not written by Stephen King. But another film about telekinesis. The Fury starred Kirk Douglas and Amy Irving and John Cassavetes. It's got some great set pieces, good performances, great score by John Williams. Though The Fury is probably best known for the scene where John Cassavetes actually explodes. Not a classic movie. I don't know why they want to remake it. Nobody remembers The Fury other than old guys like me.
Honestly, that's a perfect reason to remake it. If you're going to remake something, pick something obscure.
Yeah, and you know, maybe like it'll be like the Amityville Horror, because I did not like the original Amityville, but the remake, even though it was pretty mediocre, it was still slightly better. So at this point, they can only go up.
Exactly. All right, I got that I'm going to save that last story for last, but that one I forgot about. But again, thanks to the glory of Slash Film, we have Uwe Boll, the man who just won't stop making movies. I hear the petition. He said he'd quit making movies if the petition got 1 million signatures. It was like 200,000 last time I heard.
Man, that's sad. More people need to go out and vote.
But he's picked a fight.
Ah.
Not with the with various internet bloggers, but with, you know, I think we just need to play the entire audio. This is thanks to Slash Film. We'll link to it. You need to see the video too, because it's just hilarious to watch. We're going to turn the mics down so our laughter doesn't completely kill it.
Let's hear this.
Hi, here's Uwe Boll, and you see my outfit, so you know what's coming up now, basically. Tja, Michael Bay responded to my note about him in a very insulting way for me. He said that he doesn't care about me, and this was very insulting, because I care about him. And I think that with the money he has for his movies, he sucks big time. And I think it's time to meet in the ring, actually. So it's my message to Michael Bay. Michael, in between your pool parties in L.A., you know, or your casting sessions with the strippers, you should start training now. And I'm sure you look good, you look thin. I saw you in the Hollywood Film Festival. I think you're a fit guy and you do, like, private Muay Thai, karate, bullshit, Asia, bullshit crap fighting stuff in L.A. where you think you're super cool that you do that with your $500 trainer every day. So let's meet in the ring in September or October, pay-per-view, Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas, 12 round of boxing, Boll against Bay. It's also independent filmmaking against the studio system. And I think at this day in the Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas, we will clear it up. Who is not only the better director, who is also able to fight more for that what he wants. Okay, Michael, if you hear that message, I expect that your people contacting me, and it will be all arranged. We even make money with it. And so let's go for it. Boll against Bay. It's on.
I just don't even... I wanted to play the whole thing because I don't want anything to be taken out of context. This is the entire video. This is the entire audio.
Oh, no, because we don't want anybody to misinterpret that. You can't even understand what he's saying without subtitles half the time anyway.
But he's calling out Michael Bay to go boxing 12 rounds at Mandalay Bay, and it's September, October.
I have never wanted Michael Bay to hurt someone more in my whole life. I want Michael Bay to do with Uwe Boll what Ivan Drago did to Apollo Creed in Rocky IV.
Or, you know, the other way to look at it, you know, I was, quote, the AVP thing. In this case, no matter who wins, we all win. Because honestly, I mean, I would pay to watch this. I'll be really honest.
Yeah, and I've never thought I'd ever root for Michael Bay my whole life until just now. It's like, how low will this guy go? Not only does he have the tenacity to make, really, even before it's come out, truly probably one of the worst films of all time, Postal, and now this. It's like the guy, it not only is a total like publicity whore, but now he's doing...
Either he has the best sense of humor in the face of the earth and is a complete genius, or he's insane.
He's like the Dennis Rodman of cinema.
Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one. Have you got anything else before I get to the last story?
I do. I got a couple more. M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening has officially been rated R.
That's exciting to me.
Very exciting because, you know, even though you and I will defend it to an extent, let's face it, Lady in the Water was not the best step up for him. This is clearly, he's not soft pedaling. His new film is a hard R, and apparently it's him going back to the dark thrillers that established him. You know what? I know people want him to expand and kind of do other things, but hey, he's great at this genre. And I'm certainly hoping that The Happening is going to be a terrific film. And this is, you know, I think it'll really stand out.
I hope so. Yeah, I'm excited to see it. Absolutely. What else have you got?
The Hobbit thing.
Okay, that's what I was going to get to.
Okay, you go ahead.
Okay, so there's two portions to this. First of all, everyone on the face of the earth now knows that Benicio del Toro has been... Guillermo del Toro.
It's okay,
I have no
too.
Idea where that.
The Wolfman is directing The Hobbit.
What? Dang it, Bobby. No, I'm so sorry. our apologies to Guillermo del Toro, but he has been confirmed that he will be directing the Hobbit movies. He's moving to New Zealand for 4 years, making a really significant commitment to this. Apparently, Peter Jackson will be overseeing things. And
so it's movies. It's going to be two films?
It is going to be The Hobbit, and apparently they're going to make a bridge film between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings.
Ah.
of their own original writing, which I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that. So how do you think about this? Before I get to the secondary part of this, how do you think of Guillermo del Toro taking on The Hobbit?
This is asking for trouble because he's an excellent director, Mr. Del Toro. If this is a terrific movie, people are still going to wonder, what would have been so much better if Peter Jackson directed? And if it's terrible, people are going to be like, well, of course, it's terrible. Peter Jackson didn't direct it. To me, this is asking for trouble. It can't possibly go well, even though Del Toro is an excellent director.
I think, well, I don't know if I'd go quite that far because if you look at Pan's Labyrinth, you look at the Hellboy movies, I guess I should say, they have a style to them that I think could thematically live in the same universe as the Lord of the Rings trilogy. It's not going to have the same look. It's a different director, so it's going to that's just not going to be the same. But then again, Slash Film, well, we're referencing them what, three times today, I think? Yikes. But they came across an interview that Guillermo del Toro did with Salon.com talking about how he's never had any interest in the Lord of the Rings genre. To quote it, it says, "I was never into heroic fantasy at all," Del Toro admitted during a 2006 Con interview. "I don't like little guys and dragons, hairy feet, hobbits. I've never been into that at all. I don't like sword and sorcery. I hate all that stuff."
Well, it's a good thing he's directing The Hobbit then.
That one just kind of throws me for a loop.
And the idea of a bridge film I find a little insulting because, let's face it, it's the faithfulness to Tolkien's genius, to his world, that has made those three films the classics that they are.
And that's how I understand it. It's very possible that they're saying they're writing something, but they're taking stuff from the notes from like Unfinished Tales that Christopher Tolkien put together or something like that. But still, I'm like, I don't know how that second film is going to be taken, really.
You know, I loved the Star Wars prequels, but for people who hate them, they have an excellent point. What's better, the prequels or the movies that we imagined in our mind that were so good? Do we really need all this? Do we need to see this stuff?
Very true. Very true. So we'll see what happens.
Hope for the best.
Yeah, let's take a quick break and we will be right back.
Sue Ellen Greenblatt is a real person, not an internet celebrity. So we've enlisted Billy Flynn and the Vicar to help her tell her story.
Geek Radio Daily gives me geeky news about movies, new DVD releases, even comics and gaming.
Geek Radio Daily makes me feel special.
Ah, yeah.
Womanly.
Yeah.
Okay, so the episodes are just 15 minutes, perfect for my commute or for just geeking out while I'm at the office.
Mm. All in one concise love package.
Ooh, the package, baby.
Uh-huh. And the best part is that it's a daily cast, so I'm always in the loop.
Sometimes I listen to it out of the bath, put on little outfits.
It makes me want to invite all my friends over to show how refreshed I feel.
A slumber party, baby.
What? That's not what I said.
Get out the
chocolate mousse.
Duct tape.
Oh, get out of here, you freaks.
Geek Radio Daily. One 15-minute podcast provides 15% of the USDA recommended daily allowance of geeky goodness. Subscribe through iTunes or visit geekradiodaily.com.
Hi, this is Nichelle Nichols. And when I'm in this quadrant, I tune in to Screen Geeks Radio. You should too.
That is the coolest freaking bumper.
I could listen to that on a loop all day.
Our thanks, our sincere thanks to Nichelle Nichols for doing that for us. I have to say, the one she did for iSci-Fi TV, I think, is even better. But yeah, she did a great one. That was just absolutely awesome.
Thank you, Miss Nichols.
I promise we won't be playing like these every single week or anything, but hey, we got it. Why not use it?
Hey, now we finally have a bumper. Hey,
finally. Yes. Okay, so last week we guested on the GRD Weekly, episode number 8, I do believe, talking about the summer movie preview. We're not going to rehash that, but we are going to talk about something a little bit different along those lines.
Yeah. We want to talk about our favorite summer movie experiences as opposed to talking about our favorite summer movies, because if we do that, then it's like, okay, do we go all the way back to Jaws? Do we go all the way back to Star Wars? but rather, we'll talk about the experiences we've had in the theater, remembering these movies, these summer films that we loved, and also the experiences of watching summer movies that we truly, truly hated. So,
because some of these are franchises, we'll say.
Yes.
And, you know, the first couple or the second couple or whatever were great, and then you have to remember, oh man, these ones suck too.
Yes.
I guess I'll kick it off since, you know, this is going to be happening again pretty much every summer, every July 4th from now to the end of eternity, there will be a new Will Smith movie.
Apparently.
This really started off with Independence Day, didn't it?
I believe so.
Yes. And, you know, it's a stupid movie, but I love it.
Hey, I think it's great that we can destroy an alien race with a computer virus.
With a Mac.
It's good to know, yeah, that it annoys them as much as it does us. So it's good to know that really there's not a whole lot of differences between us and the alien species that have conquered the planet, essentially.
In a way, this is the perfect movie to bring up first because it's mindless action that's just fun. Yeah. And that's pretty much the definition of a summer movie. Now, granted, the last couple of years, there have been some, I mean, you know, some of these on my list are like, these were just really solid films altogether. But for the most part, it's just fun action, popcorn, you know, grab a nice big soda and just plop down your seat and enjoy a good time.
Absolutely. And it's on my list too. And I'll just throw this out really quick. I mean, this movie was brilliantly marketed because not only was it a July 4th weekend, but the movie takes place, I think it's over the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of July.
Yes.
So it's, and that's when it opens. So it's like people went and saw it all three nights because it's like, well, it's all part of the experience. And let's face it, this movie literally has visual fireworks.
Yes,
absolutely. It's fun. It's, yeah, sure, it's stupid, but it was incredibly well done. It's very entertaining. And like most summer movies, it doesn't have a boring moment in it. And it reaches every single audience member possible with a really wide and not necessarily well-assembled cast. There's a lot of great people in it, like Brent Spiner and Will Smith.
I was going to bring up Brent Spiner.
And Bill Pullman. Absolutely. Yeah, but then there's like other people like, why is Jed Hirsch in the movie? Why is Vivica A. Fox stripping? Like, what is this?
Oh, and Adam Baldwin.
And Adam Baldwin's in it. That's right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, and Harry Connick Jr. Like, what a weird cast.
But it works so well. It really does.
It's really, I don't think Roland Emmerich has ever topped it, to tell you the truth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you want to keep on the Will Smith tip real quick?
Let's keep going.
At the year after that, you had Men in Black.
Yes.
Which established, you know, like the Will Smith July 4th franchise forever and ever and ever. Because that was a fun movie. Again, look at, you know, an unlikely pairing with him and Tommy Lee Jones. Who knew that it would be that much fun? And it really was a good time. Nowhere near as good was the second one. The second one sucked.
But the second one was really, really disappointing. Although I got to say, like, I remember at the end of, not even the end, I remember throughout Independence Day, people cheering. Even that stupid moment where Randy Quaid finally gets his revenge against the aliens who probed him. People were cheering. I didn't really experience that with Men in Black, but you're absolutely right. The chemistry between Smith and Tommy Lee Jones was very unique and not what you'd think would work at all. But they were great.
Absolutely.
Together.
And Rip Torn was great as the
yes.
As the boss. And a very fun movie. It had a little bit of brains behind it, but not a whole heck of a lot. It had the Barry Sonnenfeld kind of out there feel to it.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Absolutely. And then we come to Wild Wild West. It's like after Men in Black 1, it kind of goes down a little bit, and then it takes a jump off a flying leap off a cliff to Wild Wild West.
The movie lost me at the opening scene where Will Smith is in a giant water tank making out with some girl, and then the tank tips over and they managed, it was just such a weird way to open a movie. The whole film just felt completely wrong. The jokes felt really, really forced. The action felt to way too much special effects to even be involved in it. Like, there was clearly no danger. There's a scene where Will Smith actually dresses up in drag to seduce Kenneth Branagh. Felt like something out of a Bugs Bunny cartoon. Then you yes. had like Kevin Kline looking completely lost. I love Kevin Kline, but he looked like he really did not know what the heck he was doing in that movie. The giant spider stolen from Mr. Smith. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, or from the Superman movie.
Right, yeah.
Kevin Smith.
Just to go on and on. I mean, to me, it really is one of the worst, one of the biggest summer movie turkeys, I think, of all time. But of course, you know, it had a catchy theme song and it was a Will Smith movie. So people, it was something of a hit in its day, although now I don't think I could find anybody who would defend it.
Yeah. You're next. Okay. One.
Well, while we're talking about stinkers, I'll just go with something that's obvious, but I got to say this was a real disappointment. I'll go back to Starfest. My first Starfest, I got to meet John Travolta, and he was there to promote Battlefield Earth. And you know, in April of 2000, Battlefield Earth sounded like a pretty cool idea. The reviews had not come out yet. It looked like a cool movie. It really did. And then I saw the movie. And in fact, I saw it on a Monday night, and there was only one other person in the theater because the reviews had already gotten around at that point. And I don't even know where to begin with that movie. It was so amateurish. The special effects looked like they were done on a guy's computer. The dialogue was atrocious. The acting was beyond hammy and corny. Yeah. Battlefield was so terrible. And it should have been, you know, I know Travolta talked about it like it was the next Star Wars, and I know that's what they wanted it to be. They had the action figures out, but it was terrible, terrible bad.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet. I haven't felt the need.
Don't give in. Whatever you do, even if it's on TV, don't do it.
Fair enough.
It's terrible.
Wow. Okay. Here's one that I came up with out of nowhere. I just remember seeing this in the summer one year. Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was such a really was like a breath of fresh air. Because, I mean, after that, then you had Dracula Dead and Loving It and all these other really crappy spoofs. I remember seeing Mafia, Jane Seymour's. Not Jane Seymour.
Jane Austen's Mafia.
Jane Austen's Mafia. I fell asleep during that movie and had friends waking me up saying, hey, if we have to suffer through this, you do too. But Men in Tights, put Mel Brooks on the map for a lot of people of our generation.
That's true. That's true. You're absolutely right. It was the last genuinely funny Mel Brooks movie, because Dracula Dead and loving it. Even I almost defend the movie because there's some jokes in that movie that I genuinely
when they kill the vampire.
Yeah, there's some good funny stuff in the movie, but really it's really one of his weakest films. But you're right, I think Men in Tights was like the last really funny Mel Brooks movie.
I mean, if for no other reason than the crack that, you know, Cary Elwes actually has a British accent through the entire movie.
Oh yeah, yeah, and Dom DeLuise is the Godfather. There's some great jokes in that movie.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yeah, and yeah.
To go with a great one, I remember all too well just how thrilling it was seeing Ghostbusters on the big screen for the first time.
Wow. I didn't see that on the big screen.
I know. I'm kind of reaching a little far back there. But yeah, to see that movie, yeah, on the big screen as a kid, I didn't find it all that scary. I just thought it was so thrilling. And the special effects today still look great.
Absolutely.
And Bill Murray, you know, complete glib smartass for the whole movie. But it's just such a fun movie.
Yeah. Well, if we're going the Wayback Machine, I have to bring up, I actually went, my folks took me opening night to go see Princess Bride.
That's cool.
And I had they gave us a theatrical size one sheet, a one-sided sheet. And it got tore up because I had it on my closet door that slid in and out behind the other door and tore up. But I love that poster. I love that movie. That's like one of my favorite movies ever, I do believe.
That's awesome. You're one of the few people I know who saw it in the theater. I don't even remember that movie being in the theater. It bombed so badly. But it's like one of those movies, like it's hard to even believe it was a bomb. Like Donnie Darko, because so many people love that film so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I absolutely love that movie. Yeah, and I'm kind of proud of being able to say, hey, yeah, I saw it in the theater.
Yeah, that's very cool. That's right, yeah. That's awesome. I got to go with Lethal Weapon 3 because I went to the champagne premiere party to that, and that was awesome. That was a new experience. Yeah, like none of the actors were there, but I think Joel Silver and Richard Donner were there. And before the movie started, one of the executives from Warner Brothers got up and gave a speech about how the movie talks about a lot of social issues, you know, like because Lethal Weapon 2 is supposed to be, you know, a statement against how he doesn't want people to eat tuna fish. And the first one's supposed to be about Vietnam. So this one is about, you know, social issues. And, you know, about 15 minutes in the movie when, like, stuff is blowing up and there's gunplay, it's like, what social issue is exactly is? And you know, all four of them are supposed to be these big social movies, but really, they're just a lot of fun. And,
oh, absolutely.
And, you know, I like them all, but the third one was the most fun I had in the theater, seeing a Lethal Weapon movie.
I was going to bring up Loaded Weapon.
Loaded Weapon.
Oh, come on. It was a funny movie.
There's some great gags.
The Butt in the Moonlight Walk and...
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good stuff.
And Kathy Ireland with doing the Basic Instinct gratuitous beaver shot. Yeah, this is great stuff in that movie.
Wow, we're coming up with stuff that's not even on our list. It's beautiful. It's all good.
It's just going all over the place.
Yeah. Shall I go for like the biggest, one of the what like defines the summer blockbuster as far as I'm concerned?
Yeah.
Terminator 2.
Mm.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I think that was actually the first R-rated movie I saw in the theater.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mine was Darkman, which was the summer before.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. T2 just... It's balls to the wall, complete, total nonstop action. It's awesome. And I can't, even though it's a cheat, you know, I mean, it's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. It's also one of the most fun movies I've ever seen in my life.
It's a thrilling movie. It was the first film to ever cost $100 million. And boy, does it look it. That film is just, it's like it just keeps topping itself. Like, I think we talked about this a few podcasts ago. It's like the opening scene where it's the motorcycle being chased by the huge truck. That would be the climax of most movies, but it's the first scene of this movie. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, crazy stuff.
I remember in the 80s seeing Who Framed Roger Rabbit on the big screen, and this is before they had multiplexes, so it was just like one big screen, and I remember just waiting in this two-hour-long line to see the movie. And knowing that the movie was playing, you know, while we were waiting for it. And it was like, oh boy, all this anticipation seeing the movie. And sure enough, when we finally got in the theater, I mean, that film was just such a magical experience for everybody in the theater. Applause and laughing and cheers throughout the film.
Absolutely. Well, if we're going to – oh, goodness. I'm trying to debate how far back to go. oh, goodness me. All right. I'll go back to when I was in junior high. I had a buddy. We'd go see movies quite often. Down in San Fernando Valley, down at the Northridge Mall before it got wiped out by the earthquake. Mm. But we'd go like, you know, every Saturday, go catch a flick or whatever. I remember we saw two movies, TMNT, and we saw the original one, you know, like the old school, obviously.
Yeah.
And Arachnophobia.
Awesome.
Arachnophobia was an insane good movie.
It's a great film.
I mean, my buddy and I were grabbing each other's like calves because we were both wearing shorts just to screw with each other for the entire movie. It's like, oh, dude, stop it, you know? Because that was a freaky movie, it's especially for PG-13. First PG-13 film, I mean, it pushed the envelope. And when John Goodman gets out the big guns,
it's awesome.
That's cinematic glory by itself.
That was the first film ever released by Hollywood Pictures.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. 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 That movie is awesome. And it's still the best killer spider movie ever. Like everything else, like Eight Legged Freaks, none of those movies come close to Arachnophobia.
Absolutely. And then you have TMNT, which, I mean, that, what kid in junior high or in late grade school in that time frame didn't freak out when that movie came out?
Yeah.
I remember like way before it was popular, I'd watch that cartoon like 6 a.m. on Saturday mornings. And it was awesome. I love it.
It's a fun, stylish movie. I still like that movie.
Absolutely. Abso-freaking-lutely.
To go with some stinkers, I remember all too well. I think I mentioned this.
Oh, I've got a few too.
Okay. Oh, yeah. We'll go back to that list for a second. Like, okay, when I lived on Maui, there was at one point, there was only about 5 movie theaters. And there was this one theater in Lahaina, which was the first one to ever have 3 screens on it at once. And, you know, I lived on top Haleakala, the volcano. So we had to drive all the way down to the other side of the island if we want to see these new movies. And sometimes, you know, it's like a 2-hour drive to see these movies. And I just remember the silence, not only of leaving the theater, but the long drive home after my father and I, after we sat through Hudson Hawk and after we saw Alien 3. Just the disappointment, just how deadeningly like, just let down we were by those movies. And, absolutely. You know, now Alien 3, you know, has its, you know, its cult following because it's David Fincher. And there are some good things about that movie, but, you know, Hudson Hawk still sucks. That movie's still terrible.
There is no defending it.
No, absolutely not. And I'll tell you real quick, the worst experience I ever had in a theater in my life, and this still holds up, and this, not coincidentally, was also in that theater, the line of cinemas, we went and saw Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie. And we, it came out like a Friday, and we saw like a Monday or, yeah, it was like Monday night or whatever. There was a girl sitting behind us, the only girl in the theater. Apparently she had been to every screening prior to us because she talked throughout the whole movie and recited all the dialogue, even the little
3
stuff
days.
Like, even like, I kid you not, even like the little stuff like, got any gum, like she just like everything that Buffy said she repeated as it happened in the movie. And the 3 of us, my brother Marty, my dad and I, we didn't say anything because we thought we were the only ones who heard it. And it wasn't until after the movie we were like, God, that stupid girl, like, yes, you heard her too. So we all suffered. I mean, that movie was pretty mediocre as it is, but that girl just...
See, for me, the most painful had to be Volcano. I hate that movie.
You hate that glowing cheese dip that takes over LA?
And here's the thing. We went to a sneak preview screening out here in the Springs, and I camped out for like 3 hours to make sure we got good seats.
Wow.
So I'm like, hey, it's a movie before it comes out. I've never been to one of these preview screenings. I'm going to get in line.
Yeah.
So my folks came about an hour or so beforehand. We all waited in line together, and they were psyched because they just, you know, we all came from LA. We wanted to see it get, you know, swallowed whole by a volcano and, you know, lava and just destroyed. Yeah. That movie sucked. That is probably one of the more painful summer movie experiences I think I've ever had.
Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible, terrible film.
To go terrible, I love Batman. Well, okay. I like Batman and Batman Returns. Mm-hmm. Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, however, complete steaming piles of crap.
So I think we both agree that Batman and Robin is terrible. Really? Not even Batman Forever? Didn't like Jim Carrey as the Riddler?
No.
I mean, I think we can agree that Tommy Lee Jones is terrible as Two-Face.
But in that case, you know, I squarely blame Tim Burton because Tommy Lee Jones is a far better actor than what he showed in that movie. And it was pathetic.
Well, that was Schumacher. Schumacher did that
one. Yeah, I'm sorry. Schumacher. Schumacher did the third one?
He did the
My
third
apologies
one
to Mr. Burton. Yeah. I am not a big fan of yours overall, but yeah. Schumacher just took a giant dump all over Batman, and that's why it took how many years between Batman and Robin and Batman Begins?
Yeah, a very long time. But, you know, a lot of really great projects in between then, like the Darren Aronofsky's Batman Year One that never happened.
Yeah.
Shame. That would have been cool.
Batman 1, you know, Batman and Batman Returns, I can appreciate his films. I don't like them as Batman movies, quite honestly.
Sure.
But they were intriguing films. You know, Jack Nicholson was good. You know, Keaton, not so much.
Do you think it was his fault or do you think it was the script's fault? Because really, I mean, I think the thing about that movie, and I honestly love the first Batman movie, but it's true when people say it should have just been called The Joker.
Absolutely. Well, it should have been called The Jack, because that wasn't even The Joker. That was Jack Nicholson.
Jack having fun.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think part of it is Michael Keaton's fault in a way. I don't know. I don't say if you can say it's his fault. It's probably Tim Burton as well because they wanted to present it this way. But I thought he was a good Bruce Wayne, but an awful Batman. It just like with Clooney, I thought it was the exact Kilmer. I think was the exact opposite. He played a great Batman, but not so good of a Bruce Wayne. And Clooney just kind of did his thing.
It was like he walked out of the ER, put on the Batman cowl, and started kicking people.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And yeah, oh
yeah.
Oh, I saw that Batman Forever in the theater. I didn't see Batman and Robin until on a plane flight back from the Philippines.
Wow.
And I was so upset at the rest of that flight back.
It could be truly said that there was a bomb on that plane.
Oh, there. Oh, a steaming one. Yeah.
Well, to go back to the fun list, I remember the cheers, the applause at the end of The Karate Kid Part 2 when I saw that in the theater. And I still love The Karate Kid Part 2. I love that film.
Nice.
Oh, I remember the ahs, just the oohs and the ahs when that big Triceratops in Jurassic Park walking across that field. And you actually feel the awe that Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum and Laura Dern feel when they're looking up at that beautiful, beautiful dinosaur, and John Williams' music is blaring. And,
it still plays gorgeous. Well today.
Yes.
It absolutely does. The second one, not so much.
Yeah, it's like the awe is gone because, you know, you've already seen the dinosaurs. There's no surprises.
Yeah, but the first one was an absolutely amazing film. I'm proud to own the DTS edition of that one because I had to, because the DTS mix is amazing. I mean, when you hear that, you know, you feel the T-Rex, you know, walking and you see the glass shaking, you feel it in the house.
That's awesome.
It's very cool. And I still have my crew T-shirt from that too.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I'll go one more old school one, and everything else is pretty recent, but True Lies.
Yeah.
You know, Arnie, you got to love Arnold. Arnold is great
in that movie.
Oh, he absolutely is. And I mean, Tom Arnold's good in it. Bill Paxton steals it. Mm-hmm. Just when they're holding him over the dam, that's all I got to say. And Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a big deal because she was 40 around then, right?
Yes, at least.
And she really did some pretty, you know, pretty erotic dance there, you know, showed, you know, older women are still hot.
Erotic dance, some tough stunts. She actually did that one where they're holding her, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually her. She did that shot on her birthday, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, amazing, mind-blowing stuff.
And they got Tia Carrera in it, too.
Tia, yes. Yeah, great film.
You know, it really just makes you have to just kind of say,
hey, it's time to put the ice pack back in my pants.
And, you know, move on from there. I had to get that drop in there sooner or later.
Yes. Got to use them while we can.
Yes. Well, we've supplied plenty of material to...
it's only fair that we start using
this. To GRD, yes. That was just for you, Mr. Flynn.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Problem Child, one of the worst summer movies I think I've ever seen. I hate that piece of crap. It wasn't funny in 1990. It's not funny now. I don't know why the movie made
so much
money.
Not as bad as Clifford, though.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Oh, that one hurt.
Not as bad as Clifford, you're right.
Yeah, and then you got the Beethoven's movies. Well, let's leave those alone. Yeah, okay. Move back to the good stuff.
Dogs is laughs. Yeah, rarely ever works. Point Break, the best bank robbing, skydiving, surfing movie ever made. This is Keanu Reeves before he played, why can't I remember the name? It was like Jack Turner or something in Speed. But he was Johnny Utah in Point Break. And it was the film that Patrick Swayze did after Ghost, you know, with his crazy shaggy hair, with lines like "If you want the ultimate price, you've got to make the ultimate sacrifice." I mean, the movie is just so freaking cool. I love Point Break.
Should we bring up Speed?
Yes, let's bring up Speed
because it was a fun movie. It's a stupid movie, but it's so much fun. And I think a lot of it has to do with Jeff Daniels.
He's great in it, and Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fun movie. You know, we're just going to be like sitting here forever, so we'll try to wrap it up with a few recent ones because, yeah, we're sitting like 40 minutes already. So
let me bring up Speed 2. Did you think it was terrible?
I didn't even watch it.
You've never seen it?
Okay, I didn't touch it. I refused to.
People never go along with me on this, and that's fine, but I honestly like Speed 2 a little bit better because I think that Jason Patrick and Willem Dafoe are so much better than Keanu Reeves and Dennis Hopper. And I think like that dynamic makes it a better movie.
Interesting.
Even though, of course, it's on a big fat boat and not on a bus. But I still like Speed 2 just a little bit better.
Wow. And then you bring up the Sandra Bullock movies. You got Demolition Man. You got The Net.
Demolition Man is awesome. I still love Demolition Man.
It absolutely is glorious. Guilty pleasures. Recently, a lot of people won't go with me on this, but I think you liked it too. Superman Returns.
Yes, thank you. That's actually on my list.
It's surprising. It surprised me how much I liked it. And it was hard for me to go along with that storyline. But the only reason I did go along with it was because they stayed true to the characters.
Yeah,
I look at it as like an Elseworlds type story where, yes, this never happened, but if it did, what would happen? And this seems to be, you know, played very true to who Lois Lane was, who Kal-El, Clark Kent, Superman is, and yeah. And poor James Marsden just can't get the girl to save his life.
Thank God he has 27 dresses.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the first night I saw it in the theater, and there was this guy in front of me sitting with his fanboy buddy.
Was there someone in front of us?
No. It was the second time I saw it.
Okay, I was like...
Yeah, you're right.
No, like
that's right. You know, it was the second time I saw it. Thank you. It was like a few days later. I took Julia to see it, and there was these two fanboys in front of me, and one of them turned to the other about an hour into the movie and said, you know what? so far, this is like one of the greatest movies ever. I hope it doesn't screw up. And then as the movie ended and the and credits started to roll, I remember he turned to the guy, I was like, oh, that was disappointing. And you know what? I understand that because I think that the movie is like 4-star perfect for about 90 minutes. And at the end, mm-hmm. there's so many special effects. There's like so many earthquakes and there's so much stuff happening that it kind of, wouldn't
the entire island made of kryptonite kind of screw with them a little bit?
Yeah, it was a little bit of overkill. And I agree with that. I think at the end, they pile on too much stuff and they could have just focused a little more on the characters. But other than that, I thought it was one of the most fun movies of 2006.
Absolutely. And then I've got four movies left to do, but I'll just bring them both up, all four of them up at once. Spider-Man 1 and 2 and X-Men 1 and 2. Mm. Both pretty darn good movies. The third of each installment, blue.
I will watch X-Men The Last Stand 5 times a day for a week before I ever go back to Spider-Man 3.
Really?
I hate Spider-Man 3.
You know, I don't know if I can go there.
Because you got Kelsey Grammer, man.
As the Beast, I know. Kelsey Grammer. And it has Ellen Page,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
but
and you know, and the opening scene was interesting with the special effects trying to make them look younger. I thought that was interesting. Okay, now I lost you. But
that was kind of, that portion of it was interesting, but the rest of the movie was a giant, it was nothing but BS. Every single life-changing event was BS by the end of the movie.
Yes.
And I felt very insulted by that. You're going to do all these things, and you know none of this stuff's going to happen. They've shown you. I mean, it's...
Yeah, considering you're right. Considering how emotionally involving the first two are, and then this third one is like, he's dead. Oh well, next scene.
Yeah,
like, we love these people. And
I've lost my powers. Oh wait, or have I?
Right.
I,
yeah, it was a total cheat. It was. You're right.
The entire movie was a total cheat. Yeah. Okay. All right. Have you got any last minute ones you want to bring up before we wrap it up?
Well, as far as stinkers, I got to mention the Island of Dr. Moreau. You have not
that
lived.
One hurt.
You have not lived until you see Marlon Brando. Covering his face with white powder, wearing weird sunglasses, a lampshade, and a muumuu, and a mosquito net.
And Val Kilmer trying to play it seriously.
Yeah, but eventually Val Kilmer does an impression of Brando that is so bizarre during this animal orgy that looks like an X-rated scene from Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cats. The movie is just bizarre. It is so freaking weird. And it was a summer movie, and it was just dreadful bad. But okay, let me end with my favorites. I still remember just how elated I was watching Back to the Future for the first time in the
Ooh,
theater.
Good call.
Yeah,
good call.
Like I remember just like I didn't know what it was. All I knew was that the guy from Family Ties was in it. And I remember just walking out like, wow, that was one of the great ones.
One and three.
I love two. I love
Do
two.
Ya?
You didn't like the hoverboards and all that cool stuff in the future? Two is really dark, and it doesn't have the heart of the first one or the third one. Yes.
Yes.
We don't think the special effects are awesome.
The effects were okay here and there. Yeah. And there were some spots that were kind of fun, but it doesn't hold a candle to the other two to me.
Lorraine Vane with the huge boob job and the evil Biff world? No.
Wow. And then you had McFly hanging upside down.
Yeah, right.
Because he was demanding more money, and so they said, oh, you're going to be in the movie, and this is what you're going to do.
Right.
I mean, from that aspect, it's kind of fun, but I still love one and three more
okay.
by far.
Okay, that's fair. The last recent one, just because it was a great experience when I saw it in the theater. I know I'm kind of alone on this one, but the first Mission Impossible was really, really cool. I thought it was. It wasn't until the fourth time I saw it that I completely understood what the heck was going on, but I still enjoyed the first Mission Impossible.
I will, okay, because you brought this up, I will bring up this movie. The reason I don't like Mission Impossible is because The Saint came out. I thought The Saint was a much better movie.
Hmm.
I enjoyed it far more.
Okay.
That's my problem with Mission Impossible, because The Saint did it the same summer and did it better.
Saint was actually the following summer. But,
was it?
Yeah, but
oh, my bad.
But no. But that's an excellent point.
I didn't see it until the following summer. That's what it was. Okay, that makes sense. Though.
But I'll tell you what, though, you make an interesting point because like Mission Impossible has as far as Ethan Hunt goes, there's a total void in the center of that movie, but everything around it is pretty cool. Whereas The Saint, the character of Simon Templar, played by Val Kilmer, is the movie, and he's fantastic. But the story around him, I thought, was really lame and uninteresting.
It was kind of ghetto, but you're right. He was more interesting. I didn't
Kilmer
like it.
Is fantastic in that movie.
Yeah. I didn't like any of the Mission Impossibles till MI3. I'll be really honest.
Really?
Yeah. I hated two worse than I hated one.
Didn't like all those doves and slow-mo and... Didn't like those woo-isms?
Not so much, no.
It's okay,
no, not really.
Does.
No.
Nobody does. All right, my last two. And this was kind of the same summer, although one came out. It was so successful they were playing concurrently. As a child, I don't think I've seen any movie more on the big screen than E.T. and Return of the Jedi. And many of those two, I think I saw just concurrently, back-to-back, constantly during the summer of 1983. It would be like, Barry, do you want to go to the bookstore? Do you want to go see E.T. again? E.T., do you want to go to New York? Do you want to go see Return of the Jedi? So those two, I just watch in a constant loop in the theater as a child, and those two have influenced my love of film so much.
I will bring up one more. Okay. Star Trek IV.
Nice.
Oh my gosh, that created my love for Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because it was such a fun movie.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, we need to stop because, wow, yeah.
Okay, well, that's, I'm done.
We were going to stop 5 minutes ago. And,
I'm done.
Cool. But, yeah, send us an email. Let us know what you think. We'll have the email address at the end of the episode. Let's talk about what's hitting theaters this week.
The most anticipated film of the summer, Patrick Dempsey in Maid of Honor. That's right. Okay, I'm kidding. But hey.
Like Man of Honor? Like the sequel? Or it's like Cuba's actually... Never mind.
It was Men of Honor.
Men of Honor.
Was it? Yeah, I haven't even seen that movie.
Oh, don't. But it was pretty good. But
you know what? I want to see Maid of Honor because not only does it look a little better than it has any right to be, but it's got Michelle Monaghan in it. Speaking of MI3 and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I love Michelle Monaghan. So
fair enough.
In the middle release, you've got Son of Rambo, which is supposed to be a terrific film for nothing but good things.
I really
want to
see that.
And Jon Favreau's.
I cannot wait to see this thing.
It looks great. It looks like a terrific movie.
It looks like so much fun. I'm actually going with Stephanie and my folks to see it next Saturday. So
nice.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to talk about it next week. Hopefully we won't be like, oh, this thing sucked.
You know, it's funny. That's the Saturday you're going to see. That's the Saturday I'm going to go see Speed Racer. So I'm guessing one of us is going to have a really great time at the movies on Saturday, and I'll bet you anything it's not going to be me. So
make sure you see Iron Man before Sunday.
You got it, buddy. There's no way. There's no way I'm waiting to see Speed Racer before Iron Man.
So. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Shall we hit the DVDs for next week as well?
Yes. Yes. It's a little bit of the good, the bad, and the P.S. I love you. Let's just start with that.
And the fugly.
Oh, yes. That film, you know, there's no reason it should have been as bad as it was, you know, Gerard Butler, Hilary Swank, but man, that movie sucked. Then you've got the bizarre Bob Dylan biography, I'm Not There, with everybody from Christian Bale to Cate Blanchett. Finally, Mystery Science Theater, the movie, is on DVD.
Yes, This Island Earth with the professor from Gilligan's Island.
The jokes are so funny. That movie is so laugh out loud.
Don't you remember Shrinky Dink? Yeah. Oh, it's such a good movie.
Awesome movie. Then flipping over to the not so awesome movie that has an interesting premise, not a good movie at all, Teeth. I've seen the film. I've lived to tell about it. Yeah, Teeth really blew. I'm sorry. A movie that was in theaters like 5 minutes ago, Eva Longoria and Paul Rudd in Over Her Dead Body, already on DVD. That's saying a lot there. John Waters and Kathleen Turner. Well, actually, John Waters isn't in the movie, but he directed Serial Mom, now available in a collector's edition. That's awesome.
Yes.
Serial Mom is no masterpiece by any means. It's no Hairspray.
It's a fun movie.
It's fun. It's fun. It's stupid, but it's fun. He-Man and She-Ra team up in The Secret of the Sword. Awesome.
Yeah. For all us 80s kids, it's awesome. Everyone else is like,
the heck
She-Ra?
Is that?
Really? You're bringing up She-Ra? Shut up. She was cool.
I used to watch those when they're on TV back to back, and I made no apologies about it because they were both cool. The villains were cool. The little flying owl with the huge ears and She-Ra was cool. I thought cooler than Orko, for that matter.
Yeah, Orko was a dork.
Orko was lame.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess that'll take care of it for this episode. We still came in under an hour. Yay! If you'd like to shoot us an email, by all means do. Barry or Dave or podcast or Josh or Ethan at screengeeks.com. We do have an announcement coming up in about a month or so. And it is very cool. I can't wait. We're just going to pop it on you when it happens. But we're excited about it. So I guess that's about it. Shoot us an email. Let us know what you think. Give us your favorite summer movies from way back in the day. And until next week, this is Dave.
And this is Barry.
Take it easy.